Available at farmnewsnow.com or wherever you find your favorite podcast. Agriculture through a modern lens. This is the AgriPod with Alice McFarland.
On this episode, Canada ranks number 3 in the world for herbicide-resistant weeds, only behind the United States and Australia. The last extensive survey in the province occurred in 2019-2020, and estimated producer losses due to herbicide-resistant weeds was at $340 million per year. It found that green foxtail, volunteer canola, wild oat, wild buckwheat, and kochia were the biggest concerns. The top instance of herbicide resistance 5 years ago was group 1 in wild oats. Herbicide-resistant wild oat was found in 77% of 250 fields where wild oat was collected and tested. Charles Geddes is with us, and he is a research scientist with Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, and he will talk about the new herbicide-resistant weed survey. The federal carbon tax has been completely ineffective of reducing fossil fuel use, and it has also made it harder for farmers to afford the adoption of new innovations. That from Manitoba Pork General Manager Cam Dahl. He says farmers face challenges as they work to adopt environmentally sustainable green practices while continuing to operate in the red. Dahl is calling on government to replace its policies of taxing farmers to stimulate decreased fossil fuel use with one where incentives are offered to stimulate the adoption of technologies and practices. After the break, Charles Geddes.
Digging into the topics that matter to you, the AgriPod with Alice McFarland.
Charles Geddes is a research scientist with Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. Today we're going to be talking about the herbicide-resistant weed survey that will be going on specifically in Saskatchewan. So, Charles, first of all, tell us about this survey.
We have funding to do the herbicide-resistant weed surveys in Saskatchewan over 2024 and 2025, surveying fields both pre-harvest and post-harvest. Pre-harvest survey covering a whole range of resistant weeds. The post-harvest survey typically just focuses on kochia and Russian thistle. And so the way these surveys are set up, they're randomly selected fields. When a field is randomly selected, we contact the farmer and get land access permission from the farmer to include their field in the survey. Throughout the summer here, moving forward, we will be contacting farmers to ask for land access permission. So we're looking forward to seeing the new status of herbicide resistance in the province.
Charles, how do you decide which fields are randomly surveyed?
It's essentially done by a computer where it's a random selection of quarter sections. Quarter sections are linked to the landowner, and then that's how we contact the landowner.
So throughout this process, do you find that the landowners are receptive to this? I guess in the long term, they want to know what's happening in their own fields.
Generally, they are. We do provide some valuable information back to the farmer, right? So doing these, especially for the resistance side, doing these resistance tests, it costs $100 per a sample and herbicide combination. So we're testing a whole suite of herbicides on a whole range of weed species, and then we're giving this information back to the farmer for that specific field. So it really helps them understand what types of herbicide resistance they're dealing with at essentially no cost to them. And the information in the end is all aggregated together just to keep everything at a level where, I mean, you won't be pinpointing back to an individual field, for example.
So will you be doing the same number of fields as you did in 2019-20? And if not, is it easy to compare the results from the two because it's randomly done?
Yeah, so we will be doing a similar number of fields. So we're targeting 200 fields pre-harvest, 200 post-harvest in 2024, and then the same thing but different fields in 2025.
So based on the 2019-2020 survey, what weeds are you expecting to see as problems?
Yeah, so I mean, some of this stuff is relatively easy to predict. Things like wild oat, it's an issue across the prairies, both group 1 and 2 resistance. It's been an issue for a few decades now, and something that's certainly increasing. On the grass side, green foxtail, especially group 1 resistance there. And I mean, group 2 resistance is lower, but it is increasing. for other broadleaf weeds. I mean, kochia is a prime example, but some of those pigweeds and other broadleaf weeds resistant to group 2 products are increasing as well.
Now, you've released a dollar figure on the 2019-2020 loss from herbicide-resistant weeds. Can you share more of that with us?
It was $340 million annually as a cost to farmers in Saskatchewan. And so this is the estimated cost of decreased crop yields and quality, and then also the increased cost of weed control to manage these issues.
So is it safe to say that number will be higher this time around?
It's fairly safe to assume that it will be higher. We're expecting that the percentages of resistance will have increased slightly since the past survey, right? So it makes sense that the cost has increased as well.
So at this point, would you speculate the drier than normal conditions over many of those years would have some sort of an impact?
It certainly would have an impact, and the impact would likely vary depending on the species, right? But the impact is not always in the same direction. So lack of moisture over the last few years, it results in lower efficacy of herbicides, right? And typically that means that weeds that are surviving, a greater percentage of those will actually be susceptible weeds compared with resistant ones, right? And so in that way, it actually may be mitigating resistance. But then you also have to think about weeds like kochia, for example, that really thrive in those dry conditions. And that's why we've been seeing kochia, and particularly herbicide-resistant kochia, becoming such an issue over the past about half decade when we've been in this really dry spell.
Charles, how long does it take to crunch all of those numbers? Now, you finish in the spring of 2025. Would it be fall of 2025 or winter of 2026 before you have a map and some statistics?
It usually takes about a year to finish off all of the whole plant bioassays that we're using to screen these populations for resistance after we actually collect the samples from the field. So if we finish our field sampling in 2025, we can expect the maps and everything to be ready in 2026.
Charles Geddes is a research scientist with Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, and he will lead a herbicide-resistant weed survey in Saskatchewan this fall 2024 and the spring of 2025. After the break, we'll hear from Manitoba Pork General Manager Cam Dahl, who will be talking about the federal carbon tax and whether it has been effective in reducing fossil fuel use.
Digging into the topics that matter to you, the AgriPod with Alice McFarlane.
Cam Dahl is the general manager of Manitoba Pork. And Cam, you have been circulating an article that has come up in Manitoba newspapers and other areas talking about the challenges that farmers are facing to adopt environmentally friendly or green technologies. Maybe start by explaining some of the factors that are contributing to the current state of agriculture and the difficulties that producers are facing.
So fortunately, things are on the upswing, but it has been a couple of really difficult years. Coming out of COVID-19, we saw actually the demand for pork fall, and at the same time, we saw record high feed prices. So the price of pork was softer falling, and the cost of inputs was going up significantly. So it's been a difficult couple of years, but fortunately, we're seeing things start to swing the other way, and pork producers are coming back into positive margin territory, which has been sorely needed.
So as farmers are moving towards this improved economic situation, what are some of the challenges that are being thrown their way?
I think, again, that softening of demand coming out of the pandemic, it was, people started using pork when they were cooking in their own house, but not as much when they're going out to restaurants. So that was a real challenge. And of course, we have disease pressures, whether it's PED or PRRS, and the threat of African swine fever around the world. And then there's a lot of market uncertainty, that's caused by ASF around the world. It's not clear what the economy of China is doing, and they're the largest consumer of pork in the world. And so there's a lot of business uncertainty as well. And again, those high feed costs for the last couple of years have made things it's been difficult.
What impact has the federal carbon tax had on agriculture and specifically for the pork sector?
Well, the objective of the carbon tax is to encourage people to use less fossil fuels, but that's not really possible if you're heating a barn. You either have pigs and raise animals and heat your barn, or you don't. It's not a discretionary cost. It's not something you can choose to do less of. So really, what this means is that has just been another added cost to the bottom line, and again, it's been a difficult couple of years, and farmers can't afford to have additional costs added to their balance sheet, and that's really what has happened. And at the same time, we're competing in international markets, and our prices are set in international markets, and our competitors don't face this cost. And so we have a government policy that isn't accomplishing its goals, because it's not reducing the use of fossil fuels, and at the same time it's making Canadian farmers, Canadian hog producers less competitive internationally, and so it's a double shot, and there are better ways of moving to more environmentally sustainable practices, and the carbon taxes is not the right way for agriculture.
Then what do you consider to be some of the alternatives that need to be considered?
What I think we should be looking at is ways of incentivizing new business practices, whether it's changes in ventilation, whether it's changes in barn construction, taking away some of the risks of adopting new practices for farmers, and we would get to a situation where we could be adopting practices that are more environmentally sustainable, and at the same time they're reducing farmers' costs and not increasing it. So there is a better policy approach, and that's working with farmers and working with producers to incentivize new practices that will reduce costs and reduce energy use, and that would be so much more effective than what we're seeing today.
How effective has the carbon tax been in stimulating the adoption of environmentally friendly tools or practices?
Well, I think it's been completely ineffective, one of the reasons for that is when farmers are looking at negative margins and facing increased costs, that's not the time when they're able to go out and modify their operations and modify their infrastructure to reduce energy use and reduce the use of fossil fuels. They're just working to get by to a point where the industry is more profitable. So it's the imposition of additional costs through the carbon tax has actually, in my estimation, slowed down the adoption of new practices and new barn designs, new ventilation, all those kind of things that actually would have an impact. So I think it has had a negative effect on environmental sustainability.
Cam, how can we get more information or access your article?
Well, they can visit our website, send me an email, and be happy to share it with you. But it is up on our website as well.
Cam Dahl is the general manager of Manitoba Pork. Here are the top agriculture stories for the week of March 4th, 2024. Grower groups and the federal government partnered on providing funding for weed research to the tune of over $20 million over 5 years. With over $11.2 million in funding coming from Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, a further $9.3 million will come from Manitoba Crop Alliance, Sask Wheat, Alberta Grains, Western Grains Research Foundation, and Canadian Field Crop Research Alliance. Administered by the Canadian Wheat Research Coalition, the Wheat Cluster will fund projects that advance wheat genetics, agronomy, and sustainability. Canada's major railway struggled to meet grain transportation needs in week 30. CN and CPKC Rail supplied a combined 77% of hopper cars ordered. That was unchanged from the prior 2 weeks. While overall system performance was unchanged, it reflects improvement for CN and deterioration in performance for CPKC as compared to the previous week. CN performance remains below the 90% threshold for the 8th consecutive week, and CPKC performance remains below the 90% threshold for the 6th consecutive week. What is the most pressing agriculture-related issue for farmers ahead of the Saskatchewan election? That's the question being asked by the Agricultural Producers Association of Saskatchewan as they are conducting a survey of what issues are top of mind for farmers. APAS President Ian Boxall is encouraging producers to fill out the survey to give the organizers an indication what they should be working on and what they need to be lobbying the government for going ahead into an election. Boxall says the answer is completely up to the producer, whether it's details from the crop insurance program announcement or drought preparedness. The Saskatchewan government renewed a 5-year funding agreement with the Global Institute for Food Security at the University of Saskatchewan, also known as GIFS. The $3 million per year will support ongoing operations, such as supporting crop breeding through sequencing, biometrics, and data analytics services, or technology development that facilitates commercialization of new products. Lonnie McKay has been reappointed the commissioner of the Canadian Grain Commission. McKay has over 40 years of experience as a primary producer. He also served as president of the Canadian Limousin Association, the Ogama Agricultural Society, and the local Saskatchewan Stock Growers Association. He was first appointed in 2017, and his reappointment is for a term of 3 years. The CGC regulates grain handling in Canada and establishes and maintains science-based standards of quality for Canadian grain. He replaces Doug Chorney, who announced his retirement effective April 30th. The Canola Council of Canada's board has elected a new chair following their annual general meeting. Tessa Ritter also works as Viterra's stakeholder relations manager. She has been chosen to lead the Canola Industry Group's board of directors. She succeeds Jennifer Marchand of Cargill, who finished her 2-year term as chair but remains on the board as a director. If you like what you've heard, you can rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends and make sure to subscribe to AgriPod with Alice McFarlane for more weekly episodes.
The AgriPod is produced by Colby Heiss with host and CJVR Agriculture Director Alice McFarlane and is a division of the Jim Pattison Broadcast Group. Available wherever you find your favorite podcast and at farmnewsnow.com.